This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to Road School Moms Radio, where education meets adventure. Your host, Kimberly Travaglino of Full Time Families, and Mary Beth Goff, the Road Trip Teacher, will share advice, information, and encouragement to bring your road schooling efforts to new levels.
Thank you for tuning in to Road School Moms. I'm one of your hosts, Kimberly Travaglino, full-time RVing mom to four road schoolers and co-founder of Full-Time Families, the resource for your family's answers to full-time RVing questions and so much more. Tonight, I'm coming to you live from a somewhat stormy South Florida, and on the show with me tonight and every Sunday night is my lovely co-host.
Hey, it's Mary Beth Goff, your road trip teacher, also a traveling road school mom to four kiddos. Creator of, I'm right out of the gate and I'm already fumbling with my words, KT. Anyway, this is Mary Beth, and I am the creator and author over at RoadTripTeacher.com, a road schooling resource for traveling families, and also we chronicle our travels at DiaryOfARoadMom.com. I'm also coming to you from kind of crazy weather down here in South Florida, but we are so excited to be with you from wherever in the world you are tonight.
Yes, Mary Beth. Tonight on the show, we'll be joined by a CPA and road school mom to discuss taxes and the full-time RVing family. But before we do that, I'd love to take the opportunity for a brief public service announcement. Last week, Mary Beth, you revealed that since my family blew into town, the weather has taken a turn. And this week, it got even stranger. I know for on my end of Florida, since Friday, we fielded two tornado warnings. And I have to say, all the things people can worry about when they transition from sticks and bricks or homes, as RVers call them, to living full-time in a trailer, tornadoes is definitely something not to mess with. I heard there was some tornadic activity in your neck of the woods, too, Mary Beth. Is that true?
You know, it's been crazy over here on the Gulf side. Last Saturday night, if you remember, I think I briefly talked about it on the show, there was a tornado that touched down in Cape Coral, which that particular tornado was about 7 miles from where we are, so that was kind of extra scary for me.
I heard there was tornadic activity in your neck of the woods, too, Mary Beth. Is that true? Oh, why
yeah,
hear
it was. I don't know. You have an echo. Anyway, that first tornado damaged about 200 homes in North Fort Myers up in Cape Coral. There was another one this week down by the airport, Fort Myers Airport. That was, I think, just damaged. But the one this morning that I know has been far widespread. I know there was. If you looked at the boards earlier, KT, you know, in the TTOs up there, I think they evacuated Peace River. There was two. This is from the news that I've seen earlier. I know that there were a couple of fatalities in Sarasota up in Manatee County, and I believe there was even injuries, if not more, in Siesta Key. So it was a very, very crazy tornadic week here in South Florida. It's been really crazy. So I just like to keep in prayer all those that have been affected by the storms and pray for God's peace for the victims, comfort for their families, and protection for the responders who were called to put themselves in harm's way.
Absolutely. Now, if you're camping in a location that's prone to tornadoes, it is wise to do a little prep work to keep your family safe. Like the road school moms love to say, be prepared, not scared. So some things you can do are, number one, figure out where you'll take shelter. Does your campground in your have a designated shelter? This should be marked on the map you've received when you check in. And if not, if you're in a campground and you're in, you know, like a place with tornadic activity during tornado season, then you're going to want to call the office or go to the office and find out where they suggest you take shelter should you need in case of emergency.
That's right. And number two on our list of things to be prepared is not a bad idea to have a bag of essentials packed. I did this when I was in a house. So I've actually done this in the RV. Of course, it's a little bit smaller than the one I had in the house. But this contains some personal hygiene items, some basic prescriptions, a possibility maybe change of clothes, closed-toed shoes are something that I always keep in that bag because we don't always have, you know, especially when we're down here in Florida, we have flip-flops. But I always think in a case of emergency, I want my kiddos to have closed-toed shoes on. So I always have tennis shoes or some sort of that, you know, in that same area. Non-perishable snacks, some water, bottles of water. And if you really want to be prepared, you might want to even stash a deck of cards and a couple of Play-Doh or something in there to keep the kiddos occupied while you were waiting on a storm or something like that, because it is kind of a crazy time, and you want to be able to keep them as calm as you can.
Absolutely. Now, again, if you're in an area that's prone to bad weather and you're in an RV, you are vulnerable, and we don't want to scare anybody, but we do want people who are listening to be prepared. So we want you to know that you need to have, like, a weather radio or definitely an alert system downloaded on your phone somewhere. I happened to be in Chuck E. Cheese on Friday when my phone read tornado warning in your area, seek shelter. And that's the first time I've ever seen that on my phone. I knew my phone had alerts. I've gotten Amber alerts and other things, so I was pretty confident that I had alerts already, but I'd never actually seen anything that was so forcefully worded. And I was wondering if, you know, if Chuck E. Cheese, if ducking under the robotic Chuck E. Cheese was enough shelter for us. So that was my big plan on Friday. So make sure that you have a weather alert system.
That's right. And, you know, that brings up a really valid point since you said that. You know, it's no different than any other, you know, just because you're in an RV, right, or you were talking about campgrounds, it's no different than any other, you know, commercial building. Some buildings take it more seriously than the others. Some campgrounds take it more seriously than others. So it's really up to you when you check in, not after you've already seen this terrible weather coming your way. But I've just kind of made it a standard for our family. When we check in, that's just one of the questions I ask. You know, where's the bathhouse? Where's this? Where that? Oh, by the way, in case of severe weather, is there somewhere that you suggest that we go? And that way, that tells you right out of the gate if that particular campground is, you know, cognizant of that kind of thing. That way, that you know what to do in case of an emergency. For more info and our top 20 tips for surviving a storm while you're RVing, you can check out a post that I posted a couple months back over at diaryofaroadmom.com. It's called The Best RV Tips in Severe Weather, and I'm going to post that in our chat right now.
Yeah, perfect. You know, I was searching tonight for exactly that, and I came up with it. I came up with your road school, your Diary of a Road Mom one. I was like, that is so perfect. I love that. Okay, well, tonight's show is on taxes and the full-time RVing family. And there's always a lot of questions about how taxes are calculated when you're RVing. I want to bring up that in Romans 13, verses 5 through 6, it says, therefore, it is necessary to submit to authorities not only because of possible punishment, but also as a matter of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants who give their full time to governing. And since tax season is officially upon us, we are excited to have another Road School Mom join us on the show tonight. I'm going to unmute her so that she can. Leah Johnson graduated from California State University, Bernardino, with a B.S. in Business Administration with a concentration in Accounting, and soon after obtained her CPA license. She has extensive experience in both the private and public accounting sectors. Leah is an expert in taxation and is passionate about providing personalized, timely service with high attention to detail for her clients. Together with her husband, Stephen Johnson, they comprise the Leah Johnson CPA team, providing specialized tax consulting and bookkeeping services to a variety of clients, including several full-time RVer clients. Leah Stevens and their toddler son have been full-time RVers themselves since June 2015. Welcome to Road School Moms, Leah. We're happy you're here. Can you please tell us where in the world you are right now?
Hi, it's so good to be here. I'm currently in California, but we're getting ready to head over to Quartzsite, so we're really excited about that. Can you hear me?
How fun. Well,
okay.
Yep, we can hear you just fine. Well, that sounds interesting. So you're on the other side of the world as we are. I guess your weather out there has been okay. It looks like that you have some flooding, though, I guess, out that way maybe to kind of contend with, right?
We had some pretty heavy rains, but it's pretty dry now, and today was a really beautiful day. Probably got up close to 70 degrees, I believe.
So I can't complain. Well, Leah, welcome to the show. As a full-time RVing family and a CPA, what are the tax mistakes that you see families most commonly make?
So I made a list of a few things. One of the first ones that I will touch on that I encounter is a lack of attention to detail by the previous preparer, whether the person prepared their return themselves in the past or paid someone. A lot of times I will ask for a copy of last year's return and look it over. And there are some pretty glaring things that I think have to do with a lack of attention to detail. Maybe the previous preparer hasn't really stayed current on changes, recent changes in the tax laws or the political or economic client. Or maybe the preparer is relying a little bit too much on the software and isn't actually analyzing the results that the software is putting out. Some preparers can tend to focus a little more on volume and quantity over quality. So that would be one of the biggest issues, I think, is just not having appropriate discretion in choosing a preparer. Another area would be people taking overly aggressive deductions, especially some self-employed taxpayers. The burden of proof really is going to be on the taxpayer if there's an audit. And so with my clients, I try to kind of filter that and make sure we're taking the maximum permitted within the law, but not being overly aggressive because we definitely don't want any trouble if there's an audit. Another really big area where I find mistakes would be with record keeping. Taking overly aggressive deductions cannot offset the effects of keeping poor records. Just keeping good records can get you, I guess what I'm trying to say, can get you a lot further and a lot more legitimate deductions than trying to kind of bend the rules in other areas. So I always encourage my clients to keep really good, clean records so that they're not missing any deductions that they are losing out on just by virtue of not keeping good receipts and records and keeping track of everything. Another area, I'm sorry, do you want to jump in?
No, go ahead. Continue.
Okay. Another area I find with taxpayers that are employed is everybody wants to get a nice big refund at the end of the year. I try to encourage my clients who that's happening to consider adjusting their withholding so that they have that money throughout the year to either invest, pay down debt, or put towards their monthly living expenses. A big refund really for an employee means that they need to adjust the withholding exemptions that they're claiming. So that's another mistake I see very commonly. And then lastly, for self-employed, I like to keep my self-employed clients making estimated payments throughout the year so that at the end of the year when we go to file their tax return, they're not hit by late payment penalties and interest or a big balance due.
Those are some really good points that you've brought up. We also posted that you were going to be on the show on the Facebook group. And Michelle Morrow Howard wanted to know, those of you who own a small business online and travel, did you keep residency and biz tax and all that in the same state? We're currently located in Georgia, but we'll most likely use Texas as our new state residence because of homeschooling. And my brother-in-law lives there, so we have an actual physical address if need. We're confused and concerned about what to legally do with our business stuff. Do you have any advice for her?
Yeah, so I would probably need to ask a few more questions with this particular scenario. But I will say that ultimately your business, at some point, the tax trickles down to where your residency is. If it's a sole proprietorship or what's called a flow-through entity, so like an LLC or what's called an S corporation, all the income ultimately flows back onto your individual income tax return. So wherever you have your individual residency is going to dictate what state you're paying tax in, or in the case of some of the states like the Texas, Florida, and South Dakota don't have an income tax. So sometimes it can be a moot point about, you know, choosing a business to set or a state to set up your business in, because ultimately the tax is going to be determined by the residency of the business owner. If the person is wanting to incorporate their business or set up an LLC, we can talk about that a little bit later, but there might be some considerations about legally where the best state is to incorporate. But ultimately, as I mentioned, the income tax issue is going to really be driven by the residency of the owner and also the business activities. If the business owner is traveling around and conducting business in other states, even if they're claiming residency in one state, they may trigger a filing requirement in another state.
It seems like this with just many other issues that we face as full-time RVers. I'm sure this is very specific to each person's circumstances. But another one of our Road School moms, Rose, asked earlier in our Facebook group this week that as far as self-employed contractors, which is what her family finds their position is, they're self-employed contractors. Her husband works as a programming, on a programming contract with a company that's based out of California. However, their residency is in Texas. So, of course, they have that no income tax there in Texas. How would they claim, and do they have to file in California? I think that was her main question.
So for individuals, the filing requirement is mostly triggered by physically being in a state. So if they're in Texas providing these services remotely and their client is in California, then that wouldn't necessarily mean they have to file a California income tax return. But if they spend 6 months in California and are physically working there, then that might mean they have to file. So it does, like you said, depend on the facts and circumstances. But I would say that it's mostly determined by the physical location of the taxpayer, as well as where are they tying their business to. I encourage my clients, if they're going to be traveling a lot, to try to tie as much of their business activity back to their home state as they can. So, again, it kind of depends on the situation, but that would be my response on that.
Right. This goes to what you talked about in our first question about deductions, because Tony Peroni wants to know, it's tax season. How do you apply your RV and taxes? It's not a second home to us. It is our home, which a lot of us find ourselves in the same position. So how do you write things off? And thank you.
Yeah, so I did cover this in pretty good detail in the blog post that I did. But basically, It can be considered a home for income tax purposes. So if you financed your RV, the interest on your loan can potentially be deducted as home mortgage interest. The registration can be deducted as personal property tax. So there are some opportunities like that, similar to if you're living in a stick and brick and you would deduct your mortgage interest and your real estate taxes.
Sorry, I'm trying to take notes as we're going. There's so much, a wealth of information here tonight.
Oh, that's okay.
So what do you need in the way of physical tax documents, Leah, on the road? You know, should you be audited, you know, while you're traveling? I mean, do you need to keep 7 years worth of tax documents actually with you? Or how do you protect yourself from this as far as what you physically need to have with you?
Sure, that's definitely a valid concern. I know we're trying to lighten our load as much as possible, and some of those files can be quite heavy and take up a lot of space. So I would recommend 3 years minimum. The federal statute of limitations for auditing a tax return is 3 years. So in most cases, I'm going to suggest someone keep at a minimum of 3 years. There are some instances where they can go back as far as 7 years, so that's where the seven-year guideline that kind of tends to be a good rule of thumb comes from. Ideally, if you can have seven, that's best. In some cases, they can go back as far as they want to. If a return was never filed, the statute of limitations can never start to run. So if there was a year where there was some income that wasn't reported, and the taxpayer didn't even file a tax return, then the IRS could go back as far as they want to. And then another instance where there's an indefinite statute of limitations is if a fraudulent return was filed. So if either of those two conditions exist, that person had better, I mean, first I would recommend that they file a return and amend any fraudulent return as a tax preparer. That would be my advice to them. But if they're not going to do that, they really need to hang on to their records, because the IRS can go back as far as they want in those two situations. There are some special records that should be kept. Well, let me see here. On my list, I'm looking at my notes. I was going to talk about property records. So if you purchase something, you should hang on to the receipt for that until you sell it. So outside of this 3 to 7 year guideline I just talked about, if you buy something and you, let's say an example could be a house purchased or sold, you would want to hang on to the closing statement for that, any basis information on stocks, bonds, and investments, or even like the dealer receipt that you would get buying your tow vehicle or your RV. Those would all be things that you would want to hang on to until you've disposed of that asset. And then one of the other things in this area that I wanted to talk about was digital files. We actually have a scanner called a Fujitsu ScanSnap. It's not cheap. It's about $400. And with the amount of scanning we do for our business, it's been worth its weight in gold. There's also another scanner I've heard about called a DoxyGo scanner. It's really small, and it has an internal memory, so you can use it to scan without having a cord. And so investing in a good scanner, even if you, if you're just using an app on your smartphone, is another economical option. The IRS is okay with digital records. The only real big condition that they have is that you must be able to reproduce them in a legible, readable format. So as long as they're scanned or saved electronically in a way that they could be printed, if there's an audit, scan files are perfectly acceptable. I just heard a beep. Oh, I think that was my phone. Sorry.
You're fine. Okay, so you mentioned the blog post, which you wrote a guest post for us on full-time families, and for those listening, it's available. It's called The Top Three Tax Deductions Full-Time RV Families May Be Missing, and Leah went into all that, what I can deduct and what I cannot deduct, so definitely go there. You also mentioned that being overly aggressive with your deductions could be could have negative impacts, but how else can people protect themselves from being audited?
Sure. So let me just cover a few things. Probably the highest one is to report all of your income. Whenever you get a 1099 or W-2 in the mail, you can be sure that the IRS has received a copy of that as well. So at a minimum, make sure you're reporting things like that. And then there are other things where if you were audited, the IRS, they'll go and look at their at your bank accounts and various, you know, they might even look at your assets. They're going to be trying to find unreported income. So that's a really big one. Make sure you've reported all your income. If you haven't put income that's on a 1099, for example, on your tax return, the IRS computers automatically are going to detect that, and you're going to get a love letter from them. So that would be one that I really recommend, is making sure you're accounting for and reporting all of that income. Even if you were engaged in some kind of business activity where there was a loss, it's still good to go ahead and put the income on there and show all of your deductions so that you don't get any letters because of the computer glitch that that would cause. Another way to protect yourself is to treat a hobby as a hobby. Some people like to, let's say maybe they do art on the side, or they're into, I'm just trying to think of some things relevant to full-time RVers, but my brain is going blank.
Some of them sew, or, you know, attend craft sales.
Yeah, something like that. If you're really treating, if it's really a serious business, by all means, treat it as such. But if it's kind of more of a side thing, if the IRS can come in and call something a hobby, they will. And the reason for that is because hobby losses are only deductible to the extent that you have hobby income. Whereas if something's truly your business and you have a loss, you can actually deduct the loss. So that's an area to be cautious of. Another one I would say that's a real problem, surprisingly, is if you're deducting charitable contributions. I have found that many charities are not issuing receipts that actually comply with the IRS requirements. A charitable contribution over $250 must have an acknowledgement from the charity stating the amount given and that no goods or services were received, or indicating the value of any goods or services received. And you have to get a charitable contribution receipt before you file your return. So there's no, oh no, I'm getting audited, let me go back and get a receipt. If you do that, they can actually still disallow the deduction. So that's what I'm always looking out for. And then we've talked again about just not having, being overly aggressive with deductions. The IRS has a lot of algorithms in their computers that are looking for averages, and if you're showing deductions on your return that are higher than average, you just want to make sure you can really back those up if you're being audited. And then, as I mentioned earlier, just keeping really good records so that if you do get audited, there's no worries, you have everything you need to back things up that you took on your return. And then Another point I would say is to be sure to work with a good ethical tax preparer whose first priority is to keep you out of trouble. And if a person is audited and they're nervous about interacting with the IRS, a CPA can be a power of attorney for them and interact with the IRS for them on their behalf, making sure the IRS has nothing more and nothing less than what they need. Sometimes when taxpayers interact with the IRS directly, they give away more information than is necessary that causes the IRS to snoop a little further.
Those are such great, all great recommendations. For someone like me, Leah, that has, you know, like my road trip teacher business, I don't, you know, I'm not physically in any one state more than the other. You know, I'm full-time, so, you know, I'm not in any one state any more than the other. Clearly, I have a residency state. But as a CPA, what state do you find the most beneficial to actually register your business in when you're on the road, and why?
So I feel like the top three RV friendly states, Florida, Texas, and South Dakota, are all really good choices for setting up a business. And like I was saying earlier, from an income tax perspective, where your personal residency is going to drive where you pay tax on your business income. If you're going to set up an LLC or a corporation, there could be some additional considerations depending on your goals of which state to choose. There are some states that have better liability protection or offer more privacy for the business owner, or their registration fees are cheaper. But still, wherever you set it up, the income tax is ultimately always going to kind of make its way back to the state of residency of the business owner.
Oh, my gosh. This is so much wonderful information. I'm just so excited to have this as a recording so that people can refer to it on and on. You mentioned before about seeking someone who was knowledgeable, and I believe you were like leaning towards conservative in their deductions and really putting their client safety first. You mentioned that. Why is it important to solicit the advice and guidance from a CPA rather than just an accountant? And what is the difference?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Let me just go over. There's kind of four main types of tax people who can sign and prepare tax returns. There's CPAs, and I can talk a little more about what it means to be a CPA. There's enrolled agents, and there's two ways to become an enrolled agent. One is to work for the IRS for 5 years in a position requiring interpretation of the tax code, and the other is to pass three parts of an exam and pass a background check. And then attorneys can sign tax returns if they're members of their state bar. And then the last category that's kind of a catch-all would be unenrolled preparers, so basically someone who's not an enrolled agent, not a CPA, and not an attorney. Depending on the state, an unenrolled preparer, in a lot of cases, I'll just give California as an example, since that's where the beginning of most of my career was, and California has pretty stringent standards. So I'll just tell you that in California, to be an unenrolled preparer, you have to take a 60-hour course, you have to have a $5,000 preparer bond, and you have to have a P-10, which is an identifying number that you put on your tax returns you sign from the IRS. I wouldn't necessarily say that it would be wrong to use an unenrolled preparer or even an enrolled agent. Depending on the complexity of someone's return, that may be totally fine for someone. And usually unenrolled preparers and enrolled agents might charge a little bit less than a CPA or an attorney would. With that said, I'll kind of elaborate, if I may, on what it means to be a CPA now that I've covered the other three categories of tax preparers.
Absolutely.
Okay. So CPAs must have a bachelor's degree, and many of them end up getting their master's because most states require that a CPA has 150 hours semester hours of education, and usually about at least 25 of those hours must concentrate in accounting-related subjects. And then a CPA must have at least 1 year of work experience under another licensed CPA, and they must pass a four-part exam, which covers pretty much all aspects of accounting, and it has a pretty low pass rate. I know back when I was taking it, it was like only 40% of people passed, and many times people had to retake the same part multiple times to pass. It's a pretty difficult exam. And that's the requirements to get licensed. And then once a CPA is licensed, every year they have to complete an average of 40 hours of continuing education, and most of the courses have to be in technical subjects. So for me, being owning my own business, I'm always looking for courses that are relevant to my clients and keeping my clients in mind, because I have to fill out these hours, so I might as well learn about something that's going to help me serve my clients better. Most states also require a four-hour ethics course every 2 years, and ethics is something that's really stressed in the profession. CPAs can have their license suspended or revoked if they violate professional ethics or their state board's rules and regulations, and they can also have their license suspended or revoked if they engage in illegal activities, even if they're unrelated to their line of work, like a misdemeanor or a felony. Most states do background checks and require CPAs to have their fingerprints and their photo on file. And many of them hold professional memberships and stay current on issues relevant to their areas of practice. And many CPAs carry professional liability insurance coverage. As a CPA, I can be held personally liable for acts of negligence. I can't set up an LLC or corporation and conduct my business and shield myself from personal liability. It's kind of like being a doctor or an attorney. You have to kind of have a liability insurance coverage and conduct yourself with a high level of ethics so that you protect your own family and your own well-being. So that's kind of an overview of what it means to be a CPA. And I just feel like, for me, I focus on quality and not quantity. I have no desire to have 1,000 clients and churn them out and during tax season. I try to be more selective with the clients that I have and really have a relationship with them. I like to spend extra time with them and offer additional services beyond just basic tax preparation. I consider myself a business partner with my clients and an investment, not really so much a mere expense. And I have seen many times where my fees have been more than offset by just simply paying attention to detail and looking for opportunities for my clients where we can do things maybe a little differently and save on some taxes. I know I'm kind of a party pooper with saying not to be aggressive with deductions, but in the long run, if a client is audited, that's going to pay off for them. And then also, I'm always looking for legal ways to save my clients money.
Wow, I'm so glad that we've had this show tonight, KT. What I'm so glad that she connected with you, Leah, on this. I know when you really think about it, I had never really thought about so many of us are living full-time RV, and that's a little bit untraditional. We all know that. But most of us probably then also have kind of an untraditional form of the way we work. So it probably really does lend itself to take a really good look at your financial picture and how you're doing business and where you're doing business, and make sure that you have someone such as yourself, Leah, overseeing your financial records for taxes every year. I hadn't really thought about it until tonight. So this is a great show. I know Road School Mom Sarah asked when you were talking about receipts for charitable contributions. She had a quick question, and then we'll go on to some others that we've had. Sarah says, on those receipts, does that apply to Goodwill as well? Because she's saying that they hand out our standard form that just really doesn't list what the amount is, and they just say to fill that out yourself with the value. Is that what you would recommend?
Yeah, so on Goodwill, you're supposed to deduct basically There's a few different approaches, but for a Goodwill donation, basically you kind of want to ask yourself what you think the item might sell for in Goodwill. So depending on what it is, maybe a bag of clothes, each bag of clothes you deduct $10, or you just kind of want to go through your list and come up with a reasonable estimate of what it might sell for at a thrift store or yard sale. The IRS won't let you take more than $500 of non-cash charitable contributions without having to file an extra form. So a lot of people who are just giving away a few bags of clothes and maybe a couple old appliances a year, as long as you stay under that $500, you're probably not going to get questioned too much on it. If you go above the $500, which with people downsizing and especially those transitioning to a full-time RV lifestyle, this could be a really relevant issue for them. If they really are sure they've given more than $500, that's fine. You can deduct it, but then there's an extra form you have to file that asks for a lot more information. And so this would be, again, where I would just emphasize keeping really good records, keeping itemized lists of what you've given, and being fair but reasonable with the values that you're putting down. You know, your bag of clothes was probably not worth $100, but $10 was probably going to be fine. So I would say, especially to those who are downsizing, keep really good records of what you're giving, when you're giving, and to whom you're giving, and do make sure that you get that blank receipt. And then you can just attach your own list with your own estimate of the value, and then you can work with your tax preparer to fill out that extra form if you need to. I will say that that extra form does raise the audit risk of the return, so it really has to be worth it to go ahead and file it. I probably wouldn't recommend somebody file it for $700, but if maybe they gave away $1,000 or $2,000, then it might be worth going ahead and putting that form on there.
That is such good information. Yeah, that's wonderful because, you know, we think of it as those are already established in the full-time RV lifestyle and the tax implications of our lifestyle. But you're right, transitioning and getting rid of an entire household worth of goods in order to make that transition does have tax implications. And it's so wise of you to bring that up and such a great benefit to our listeners tonight. Leah, how can our people reach out for you for an initial consultation?
So I have three options for getting a hold of me. One, you can email me. My email address is info@leahjohnsoncpa.com. Or they can go to my website. That's www.leahjohnsoncpa.com. And I can go ahead and spell my name if that would help, or I don't know if you want to put the link in the show notes.
Yes, that's what we'll do. We'll put the link in the show notes.
Okay. And then they can also reach me by phone. My phone number is 936-463-8605. And I do travel, so I might not be reachable immediately, but I try to get back to people within 24 hours.
And Leah, I want to mention that you have been very generous and you've partnered with full-time families, and established full-time families members get special discounts from you. And what is that exactly? What are you offering full-time family members?
So if somebody does an initial consultation with me and they want to move forward with becoming a client, I'll need their current full-time family number, and I think Kimberly, I'll be emailing you just to verify the memberships. And then once that's all good, I'll give them a $25 discount to be applied against their first invoice for services with me.
That's wonderful, and I really appreciate your generosity.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be part of the community.
That's awesome. I can tell you that you've raised a lot of questions for me tonight, so I'm going to be examining this for me. You'll be hearing from me soon, Leah. And thank you so much for joining us tonight here on Road School Moms. If you have any additional questions that you can find, or I'm sorry, if you have any additional questions that you want to ask Leah that we didn't get to cover tonight on our chat, you can find her again over at www.leahjohnsoncpa. I'll spell that for you, LeahJohnsonCPA.com. And she'll get back to you within 24 hours, which is great.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being on the show, Leah.
Hey, KT, can you still hear me?
I can.
Gosh, I don't know why I was getting an echo. I really think it was on my end. Anyway, can you believe all that information? There's a lot of that I just really hadn't thought about. How about you?
No, I know. Absolutely. You know, we've done a lot of evergreen shows, Mary Beth. You know, we've done fifth wheel versus motorhome. We've done fire safety in your RV. We've done safety on the road as far as all aspects. And then we've done special ones about hiking and adventuring with your family. And these are all our evergreen shows that you can just tune in and listen to every time. And this is definitely another one for that evergreen bucket because, although tax rules change and situations change, the general principles and guidelines are still going to be the same. And you know, hopefully Leah won't change and she'll be out there to continue to answer questions and serve the community as a community member, which, you know, Mary Beth and I always think is the best fit possible, because sometimes when you tell people what you do, they look at you a little sideways and you need to get past that part to actually get what you need to get done. So it's always great when we can find people in the community to serve our community members.
That's right, because, you know, it really is someone like Leah. She travels the same kind of lifestyle we do, so it would be something that would be second nature her to ask certain questions that maybe a CPA that, you know, does a little bit more standardized returns might not even think of. So that's awesome. KT, tell me, what is going on at Full Time Families this week?
Oh, boy, it's been a big, big week. Last week we wrapped up the Cali Rally, and pictures are still filtering in for that event. It looked like so much fun. A big shout-out to the Wolf family for being the wagon master on that event and taking on the charge, and for all the coordinators that worked so hard and all the families that had a great time. We're just so pleased to be able to serve people on both coasts this year. Speaking of both coasts, we've got in 24 days, I saw a picture come across my news feed with Rambler on the beach, and it said 24 more days until we kick off the Sweetheart Soiree, and we are really nailing down a lot of the details. So if you're coming to that rally, I hope you're on the Sweetheart Soiree Facebook group, because that's where you're going to get a lot of the information going back and forth. We also, and as you know, that event is completely sold out, just absolutely slammed sold out. But we do have a waiting list, and if you'd like to be on it, you can email me at Kimberly@fulltimefamilies.com, and we'll get you there. What is not sold out is the portion of the rally where we are going to Legoland as a ginormous field trip. This is our fourth annual field trip to Legoland, a road school field trip, and we want you to come. So if you're not coming to the rally, that's fine. You don't have to come to the rally to come to the Legoland field trip. You can go to fulltimefamilies.com and click on the events tab, and there you'll see the Legoland information, and you can get your tickets. You have until January 26th to get your tickets. So go ahead and do that. That's not a risk of selling out. There's no cap on that event. But we will be ending the ticket sales on the 26th. So go ahead and go there and get your tickets today. This week we wrapped up an Instagram contest called the 12 Joys of RVing. We had people submit their joyousness of RVing across Instagram and tag it. We worked with Go RVing to bring that to fruition, and all of the winners are going to be walking away with 12 Joys of RVing swag bags from Go RVing, and one lucky winner, Boondock Media, walked away with a $50 Amazon gift card in addition to an enhanced swag bag. So congratulations, and thanks for sharing the joy of RVing. In the works, this week I've been working diligently on looking for a Road School Moms Bible study to be coming out this spring for people to attend this spring, online, on-demand Bible study. And if you're interested in being a part of leading that up, we're interested in talking to you. So please reach out to us at Road School Moms, and you can put in their subject Bible study, and we can see what we can get together. We're hoping to kick something off in mid-March. Also, in fall already, Mary Beth, we have a retreat, our first retreat on the books coming up in fall, and you can look for details coming out about that very shortly. So wherever you are in the world in the fall, you're going to want to be with the Road School Moms. What's going on over at Road Trip Teacher this week, Mary Beth?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, we wrapped up the whole circus thing last week where we had done, and just like in traditional road school style for us anyway, it completely catapulted my kiddos into their own areas of what they wanted to do. I was so inspired with Tyler. He decided to write two different sides to the whole whether or not elephants should be used in the circus. And he's actually still working on it. I'm so proud of him for really, I mean, he really took an interest in it. And so I don't know. I'm not patting myself on the back, but just as a mom, you know how that is when you do something that really resonates with all your road schoolers at the same time, and you can see little light bulbs going off. And so for me, that was very satisfying this week. And we are moving into some nutrition awareness in our road school this week. We have a neighbor that offered to do some home ec classes with all my kids. She's taken the boys one day and the girls the other, and they're making their own pizzas and doing some things. And with that, I thought it would be fun to kind of incorporate some of the, you know, measurements and things like that that we use in the kitchen to kind of introduce fractions and reinforce it for my older ones. And so that's been really helpful. I threw together a meal planner. I don't know if you use that, Kimberly. I mean, you know, we talk about this before. When I write things down, I lose them, so I normally don't write things down. But in looking at how we eat and how many times we just go eat out or grab something that's maybe unhealthy because I don't have the time or I didn't plan well, I threw together something really quickly. It's just a Road School Moms weekly meal planner, and I actually uploaded that to the group, to our Road School Moms group, so it's there under Docs if you want to print that out. What I like about the reason I laid mine out the way I did, I put a place for breakfast, lunch, and dinner all the days of the week, and then at one side of it I put a shopping list so that I could, you know, as I was looking at what I was going to have for the week, I could quickly make a shopping list and then just cut off the edge. So if you need something like that and that would be helpful with you to you, then we have shared that in our Road School Moms group. And other than that, we are just really kind of forging ahead, and we're going to do some Martin Luther King this week study that we had, a couple of printables that are already free over at the Learning Shop at Road Trip Teacher. And the weather's kind of crummy, so we're doing some inside Road School this week. Lots of reading.
I love that. I'm definitely going to head over to the Road Trip Teacher's free printable section and grab that. We watched Selma this week with my three older kiddos, and it was hard to watch, but it led to some really rewarding, thoughtful, thought-provoking discussions, and I'm glad that we did sit through it because it's just something that everyone needs to know about, lest history repeat itself. Well, before we wrap up tonight – oh, go ahead, Mary Beth, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I read this week, and I thought it was so crazy, and I don't have the exact percentage, but I read somewhere that a majority of Americans eat out 60-some percent of the time. That's shocking to me. I mean, we're guilty of that as well. I'm not pointing fingers because you know that's one of our habits that we would like to break, but it's so easy to eat out. And don't you find it, too, when you're traveling, especially when you're on the road, it's so hard not to just take in all the local cuisine, right? And it really eats into your budget, and it's so unhealthy. Oh, my goodness, it's so unhealthy.
You know, I do find that. And since we have been in a different income bracket in the last fall and winter, we have really had to cut our outdoor eating expenditures. And I'll tell you what happened is now if we do eat out, we all get sick. It's the truth. And I'm no great cook, but I know that what I have in this house is eon better than what I could feed my family moderately cheaply or, you know, moderately inexpensively. It's nothing to drop 60, 70 bucks if we go out to dinner as a family, and that's with us all drinking water. So, then we all get sick. So it's really kind of worked in our benefit that has been a result, because it really does keep us home. And meal planning for us is definitely the key to what goes on. And I find what I do is I take one of those chalk markers and I write directly on my refrigerator the big ticket items that I brought home from the store, because I might not always have time to meal plan before I go out to the store. We do, right. Like, sometimes we do spontaneous grocery shopping where all of a sudden it's, oh, my gosh, let's go grocery shopping. So, but I'll come home and I'll write, you know, round roast and chuck meat and chicken breasts, and I'll write that on the refrigerator itself so then I can cross off the items, because so often before we did something like that, I would go shopping and then still feel like I had nothing to eat.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah, meal planning is pretty essential for us.
It's easy to get bored, and so that's why I don't know. And it was funny, too. I made this planner actually earlier today just trying to look ahead, and I was surprised at how excited my kids got to give their input about, you know, hey, can you make this, or I wish we had some of that. And so it really led into a very positive thing. So go get yourself one.
Yeah, go get yourself one. Okay, so before we wrap up tonight's show, last week on Road School Moms' Facebook page, we put a call out to find out what our Road School Moms needed prayers for, and the response was amazing. Tonight, Mary Beth and I would like to go through would like those listening to join in prayer for the following prayer requests that we received. Laura has said that since her husband has a business trip on the other side of the world for a week, Miss Lissy Lou decided to break her elbow, not like the 50 degrees that can be set in the office, but like the 80 degrees break that has to be set in surgery under sedation and then pinned together tomorrow. Please pray for financial and healing and financial provision and for mommy to keep it all together till daddy gets back. Definitely, Laura, you have our prayers. Catherine is praying with her family for direction, as in which direction to drive. And, you know, it's ironic for families that haven't yet transitioned in this lifestyle, but picking where to go next is not as easy as you might think. So which direction to drive? Praying our daughter's release from the neurosurgeon this week. We need to roll this icicle of an RV somewhere warmer. Job options are on the opposite ends of the country with awkward waiting time in between finding out. So picking the right way to go and how to fill our time while we wait to hear is stressful. Well, Catherine, we are definitely keeping you in our prayers. And Jennifer says our rig is being fixed in Dallas and we're waiting the time out in freezing Michigan. That's no fun. Praying for patience and peace during this waiting time that is out of our control. We were supposed to be in California last Thursday to spend a month with friends around emoticon, trying to see the bright side of all this. Jennifer, we are keeping you in our prayers.
That's right, and we're also going to keep Road School Mom Carrie in our prayers as she's hoping for answers just about jobs and career stuff. We all understand that. Another Road School Mom, Diane, is really just trying to figure out what they're going to do next on all fronts. They're trying to figure out where to settle and how that will all happen, so we want to keep our prayers with her. And Athena is praying for the doctor to discover what is wrong with her back because she is currently having all kinds of issues with that, and we all know that that's such a hard thing when you don't know why you hurt. You know, it's really hard to fix it. So we are going to send prayers to Athena for healing and that she is on the mend quickly.
Absolutely. Janie wants to find a perfect house for her next job in Stillwater, Oklahoma. No trailer for a while. Yay! Well, Janie, we hope that perfect house is right in your path. Anna is looking for a quick and gentle birthing in 4 weeks, preferably not sooner, with productive prep time greatly appreciated and that our transformation time be a good and easy one for our entire family. Absolutely, Anna. We're hoping that for that also for you. And Trista has baby number 4 due tomorrow. So prayers for a quick labor and safe delivery. It's our first home birth, and I'm getting a bit nervous now, but I'm confident God will keep us safe. And we are confident too, Trista.
Yes, Road School Mom Susan is asking for prayers to get back to doing schoolwork. She says that her mom isn't motivated. Well, I'm sure every single one of us, Susan, can resonate with you on that, so we're sending you prayer for that. Our next Road School Mom, Darlene, Kimberly and I both know her, and I know that we're sending some extra prayers her way. This time of year for her, she lost her oldest son, who passed away just a few months ago. Valentine's Day is the first birthday that she's going to be on this earth without him, so we're going to send some special prayers to Darlene as she cleans out his storage building and is getting ready to bring his things back from Florida. It's just, I know it's a tough time for her and her family, so we want to send some extra prayers out to Darlene. And Zoe is waiting, oh, goodness, for her brother has been very sick. And so she asked prayers for just to help his journey on earth very peacefully. And so we want to share our concerns and our love with Zoe and her family while they're going through that process.
Absolutely. Gil, I hope I'm saying this right, could use financial, work-related, and health-related prayers. My van is suddenly acting up, which is what we'll be traveling in, and my acupuncture is the only thing that keeps my inflammation and pain in check, but it's becoming too expensive to do weekly. I'm afraid my pain will start getting worse, which means I'll work less, and then we'll have even less money coming in, which is the opposite of what we need. I need direction on what to do and what work to do so that I can take care of my health, my van, my son, etc. We hear your prayers, and we join in them, Gil. Laura says there's nothing wrong. She would love to offer up a prayer of Thanksgiving. Her husband and I will celebrate 22 years of marital bliss Friday the 15th. Well, that was 2 days ago. So congratulations, Laura, and we rejoice right alongside with you. And Dieta says we need a VA miracle. Husband's neurologist is fine with us traveling after his next appointment. we need to have the first VA disability compensation appointments before we could leave the area. We had thought it would be easy to be done by the end of February. Now they're saying maybe May or maybe sooner, praying they move faster than they expect to move so we can move when we expect to move. We are praying right alongside you for that, Dieta.
That's right. If you have a prayer request, we invite you to add it to our Facebook group. If you don't feel comfortable doing that, that's fine, too. Just send it privately to either Kimberly@fulltimefamilies.com or info@roadtripteacher.com, and we will be glad to put you on our prayer list. And I know we have some of our Road School Moms that have joined with us, that we, you know, have a prayer group that goes on within our Road School Moms kind of behind the scenes. So if you want to post it to our Facebook group, that would be great. And if you want to keep it in private, send this to us, and we will pray for you as well.
Absolutely. So this week we're going to wrap up, and we're going to leave you with our blessing. May you be a blessing and light for your family, your neighbors, and all the people who you meet this week. May the eyes of your understanding be enlightened so that you may know the hope of God's calling, so that you may know the riches of the glory of his inheritance, and so that you may know the exceeding greatness of his power toward you as you believe according to the working of his mighty power. Have an awe-inspiring, amazing week, and join us again next week at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday night, from wherever in the world you are.
That's right, KT. And just as a quick reminder, if you are listening to us over at iTunes from one of our podcasts, please take a minute to give us a review. Kimberly and I love 5 stars, but if you give us less than 5 stars, that's okay. Just be sure and drop us a note, if you will, and let us know what we can do better to serve you and how we can help you and your family on the road. When you get done with that review, shoot me an email over at info@roadtripteacher.com. And as a thank you, we will give you a digital product free of your choice, and I would love to share that with you. So, like Kimberly said, we will be here same time, same place next Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Next week's show is the very first part of our new series called This Is How We Road School. We're really excited to share some of those resources with you next week. So please tune in from us wherever in the world you are. Until then, safe travels and God bless.
This is Kimberly.
And this is Mary Beth, your Road School Moms, on the road where education meets adventure. Until next time, we wish you safe travels and leave you with our traveler's prayer. Lord, be our guide and protector. Let those I encounter be blessed by my words. Let my hands be filled with your work, and may I be filled with your grace and kind words for others. May I be a light unto those around me on the journey ahead. Amen.
Amen. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. If you'd like more information, go to roadschoolmoms.com.